in this new conditions.
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning. Welcome to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. I'm Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us. As we talked about on the Handicapper Support earlier, a great day of racing across the country and around the world. We'll have another Dubai race at 10:30, but boy, great racing here as well. The great card at Gulfstream. A little bit later, we taped an interview yesterday with Frank Miramati from Santa Anita, and we went over their stakes. So a great card out there as well. But at all the venues on the Handicapper's Report, I also talked about Aqueduct. They've got the Gotham, Gulfstream, the Fountain of Youth, Santa Anita, the San Felipe, out at Turfway, the Battaglia. Lots of three-year-old action. So who better to talk to than our friend Jeremy Plonk, who does the great countdown to the crown package throughout the Derby trail season for HorsePlayerNow.com. Jeremy, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Seth. Good to be with you. You got me batting leadoff this week for my obvious speed at the top of the lineup.
That's right. I know how that works myself. I play some old man basketball, and that first game, I'm a superstar. By the third game, it's not working out so well. But before we get started on some horse races and whatnot, big day like this, anything special over at HorsePlayerNow.com?
Well, we've got our buzz report. Jason Blewett, Terry Terrell, and myself take a look at the races. Jason's got the Gulfstream covered. Terry in California at their local venues, and then I take care of Oaklawn each week. So we had a good week last week. Hey, I'll be honest with you. We struggled the first couple weeks of the buzz season, but last week we turned the corner, so we got momentum going this week, and hopefully we'll do well for the customers out there. But buzz report out there, and of course, countdown to the crown.com. You can also get countdown through our Horse Player Now page. You can check out the scouting report there that has the four free plays that we'll talk about here on the show today with the three-year-old stakes races.
Yeah, and we'll hit on the countdown to the crown specifically a little bit later on and look at your top 20 and just get an idea there and whatnot. But I'll tell people, as I always do when you're on, during the Derby season, countdown to the crown package comes out on Friday. Really worth pulling up and taking a look. You do a great job. It's a nice printable PDF if people want to do it. Top 20. But you preview all the big stakes races early on in the Derby trail season. If there are important maiden specials or allowance races, you preview those and review the following week. So it's a great way to kind of keep on top of that Derby trail. And as I say, that's why we have you here this morning, because it's clearly a major step on the Derby trail today. And let's kick things up in the Gotham and get some of your thoughts. I just handicapped it on the Handicapper Support. In the Gotham, it's a mile, grade 3 event, $300,000. I put Dean's List on top. I thought the Pletcher trainee, third start. I liked the scenario of a couple of sprints and stretching to the mile. I thought Morello for Steve Asmussen off a couple of wins was interesting. And then I pulled up a replay because looking at the countdown to the crown and your preview, I know you're tilting maybe towards Rockefeller. So I pulled up the Nashua. When Bob Baffert shipped to New York in the two-year-old season, Rockefeller is going to be the number one horse here. Wins pretty nicely at 4-5. Subsequently had gone back to California and on New Year's Day ran second in the Sham behind Newgrange. But Baffert elects to come back to New York to try the Gotham on Saturday afternoon. Give us your thoughts in the Gotham.
Well, I'm tepidly with Rockefeller in here. I don't think he stands out in the race, and I wouldn't want to take too short of a price. My assumption is that Morello is going to get back quite a bit in here. You know, he got an 84 buyer off the last race in the Jimmy Wingfield. He's got two blowout margins in his two victories. You know, he's won by almost 10 lengths in the two races. So my hope is that Morello takes a little bit more money than he should, and you get a little bit better price on Rockefeller than you might expect on a Baffert horse coming east. You know, he was 4-5 when he won that Nashua. I'm thinking he might be somewhere closer to 2-1 in this race because Pletcher with Dean's List is going to get played. People like Undefeated Horse horses, that's for sure, when it comes to the tote. Dean's List will get bet. Morello will get bet. If you can get somewhere around 2-1 on Rockefeller, then I think he's probably the value play as the most likely winner at the best price. But I don't think he stands out in here. Morello does scare me. I mean, his two races were very impressive. I don't think he beat a whole lot in those races, especially the Jimmy Wingfield last time out. And I think he's going to be a sprinter when it's all said and done. But this one-turn mile in the Gotham isn't that much different than a sprint. And the way he won the 7-furlong Wingfield doesn't make you think that the extra eighth of a mile is going to get him beat if it's the same kind of competition. But this is tougher competition, an extra eighth of a mile. So I reluctantly toss Morello. He's like one of the horses of the horses in form and the horses you expect to run well in this race. He's the one I took a chance with and tossed. I went with Rockefeller. Dean's List, I have a lot of respect for. You know, he beat In Due Time, who I think is a major contender in the Fountain of Youth coming up. In Due Time since then won his next start and has a good shot in the Fountain of Youth. So I think Dean's List is in good form. And also Glider, I think, is a horse you want to keep an eye on. He ran second to Emmanuel at Tampa Bay Downs last time for Mark Cassie. It was a really good comeback race for him. I think Emmanuel, as we'll talk a little bit later, has a big chance in the Fountain of Youth. So the company lines, no doubt, for the Florida horses, you know, Dean's List and Glider, will tell us a lot maybe about the Fountain of Youth. Problem is they're only about 10 minutes apart on the clock. So you're not going to have a lot of time to process the information there on those kind of common company lines. But I think they have strong company lines. Glider and Dean's List would not be a surprise. Glider's probably the value in the race because he'll be fourth choice at best in here.
Yeah.
And he'll get let go. So if you can get Glider somewhere around like 8-1, if he would like go up to that price, I mean, I would rather have Glider at 8-1 than say Rockefeller at 2-1. So be price sensitive in the Gotham. I don't think there's a lot separating the four of these.
Yeah, and again, Glider may flatter Emmanuel coming out of the second place finish down at Tampa behind Emmanuel last time. So as you say, that's worth watching. They are pretty close, though. The printed page has them about 15 minutes apart here, 527, 542. So you get a little chance to dwell on that. A horse that we haven't mentioned that I think could be kind of interesting at maybe a little bit of a price, 6-1 on the morning line. I'll be interested to see if that holds or this horse goes up a little bit. But Bold Journey, Bill Mountrunner, as a New York bred, maybe gets overlooked a little bit. But what we saw down in Arkansas, maybe the New York breds are the way to go this year.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a little bit with the Rebel Stakes. But, yeah, you know, Bold Journey does come out of a good effort in the Gander, where you thought he was home free that day at 4-5.
Yeah.
He was four front in the stretch. But, you know, the horse who came and got him looks like a pretty nice New York bred as well. He's got a race over the track at the distance. Familiarity is never a bad thing. This time of year, though, you tend to see horses advance, right, do a little something that we haven't seen yet. So I wouldn't, like, harp too much, like, at this point in time. Say we have a mile and an eighth race coming up on the Derby Trail. Oh, this horse has already gone the mile and an eighth, so he's got this big advantage. This is the time when they're blossoming, moving forward. They're being, you know, tightened up even harder by their trainers to get to where they need to be. So I think horses make leaps forward at this time of year. And, you know, that may be counterintuitive to what I say with Morello and trying to beat him stretching out to the mile. You know, he might be just ready to progress right to that point. But I wouldn't overemphasize the fact that Bold Journey has already run a mile at Aqueduct, that sort of thing, and not anything against that horse personally, but just any horse in general. As you get on this Derby Trail, at this point forward, we're looking for leaps. We're looking for horses who are moving the right direction. So, you know, been there, done that. It's not necessarily, you know, the great check mark you want to make as a handicapper.
Let's see who's moving forward in the Fountain of Youth Grade 2 event. $400,000 up for grabs. 8.5 furlongs of the trip. Boy, this is a fun race. I mentioned earlier on the handicappers report, according to Mike Welch from the Racing Forum, tweeted out, looks like Giant Game is going to come out. A couple of days ago, Mo Donegal already came out, so folks can kind of make adjustments there. But Simplification, clearly going to take some action. Howling Time for Dale Romans, I think, very interesting in here. I'm going to be rooting for High Oak and Lee Einsiedler, but pulled up a replay from that Tampa race we've already talked about a little bit. You'll get it, folks will get a look at Glider here, too. Glider's going to run second, the number three horse, but the winner will be Emmanuel, the number four for Todd Pletcher. 2-for-2 so far, maiden breaker over at Gulfstream, stretched out to the two turns at Tampa in this race. We're watching as the number four horse, and he's going to take a lot of action off of these first two starts and being a Pletcher horse down at Gulfstream in a stakes race. Your thoughts in the Fountain of Youth?
Well, that's the way you want to see a horse level off and stretch out. You know, he's reaching out at the end. His head is down. That was a picture-perfect allowance win last time out for Emmanuel. If he translates that to the next level against tougher competition at Gulfstream Park this time, then he's going to be very tough to beat. He was on the lead the whole way in that race, though, and there's an absolute ton of speed in this year's Fountain of Youth. I mean, six of these horses are making their two-turn debuts. I mean, six two-turn debuts. And you look down on the inside, you got a Tampa Bay stakes winner in the Pasco sprinting in Mark Heyman. Simplification has been throwing out like 47 and 58 bullets throughout the entire winter. He's going to come out fresh and firing, I think. Howling Time, I should say, is the horse who's been doing that. In Due Time's got a little bit of speed about him. Dean Delivers is very fast. Simplification in the two hole is the horse who blew the start because he was leaning backwards as the starting gate opened last time out in the Holy Bull. If he's on his toes and ready to go at the start, he's going to be part of the pace. So you look at the, like the inside five, six post positions, and they're all horses who want to be towards the front. That's a good thing at Gulfstream, typically going a mile and a 16th. So there's going to be a melee to the first turn, I think. I think there's a ton of speed in here. I worry that Emmanuel might get caught up in that, but I'm hoping he can switch off and be professional. Luis Saez to ride him. You know, he's out a little bit farther in the eight hole, a lot of the speed to his inside. So maybe he can be just off that first flight and tuck in and save a little ground. If he's up banging and going into the first turn, though, and four or five wide, it's going to be tough for him, you know, because that's a very demanding trip for him to try to make. But I think Emmanuel is the horse to beat in here, and he's the one who I took on top in the Fountain of Youth. The race shape really makes me want to take Rattle and Roll. He's a horse I loved last year at Keeneland. He was 8-1 when he won the Breeders' Futurity. I loved him that day. About the only winner I picked during the Keeneland meet last fall, it seems like. But he ran big. I thought he was going to be the horse to beat in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, but he had a hoof abscess, they said reportedly. Didn't run again the rest of the year. Was on the farm for a long time. Since he's come back and worked in the morning, I went to XBTV and watched his workouts. I really recommend it. It's a free service, XBTV.com, where you can get the morning work for a lot of the California and Florida horses. I watched his works all throughout Florida, and he's a sweaty mess every morning. I mean, a sweaty mess. Watch the video. He tried to get out a little bit on the turn in his last workout, just a little bit. The jock had to kind of lean on him as he's coming around the turn to keep him from going out. Well, Saratoga fans, you'll remember this horse last year for completely blowing the turn at that same spot at the top of the stretch and just, you know, bolting to the outside. I went back and looked at the library of workouts, and before that race, he was a sweaty mess, and he looked bad. The only work I can find for him when he wasn't sweaty and wasn't washed out in the morning was September 5th, right before he got good and won at Churchill and broke his maiden. And if you go back and watch the video or look at the still photos of him winning his grade one at Keeneland, there's not a drop of sweat on him after the race. So this is a horse who I think maybe has a little bit of mental issues, you know, bolting on the turn that day, getting washed out in the mornings. Watch him in the pre-race. I can't emphasize it enough. I mean, just take a look and listen to the paddock commentators and their reports, because I think if Rattle and Roll is crystal clear and clean going into the starting gate, I think he might run his race. If he's washed out and messy, I wouldn't want to touch him. So this is like a really watch and see situation with Rattle and Roll. But the race shape sets up for him so beautifully, you know. I mean, there's so much speed in it, and he is a good finisher. Kenny's horses haven't fired first off the bench so far. Even Smile Happy got beat, though he ran a pretty good race. I'm curious to see what Rattle and Roll does. I reluctantly, with the pace shape setting up for him, usually that's my number one factor in handicapping how a race shapes up. I reluctantly won't play him today. I don't think he's going to be my play. He's certainly not on paper, because I anticipate he's not going to look great pre-race. He hasn't in the mornings in terms of being washy and things like that. So keep an eye on him. I think that's a really important handicapping factor today and moving forward with this horse.
Yeah, that is definitely very interesting info, because you look at the times of the workouts underneath. They're good times. But Gary West has always said venerable racing writer from Texas has always said, it's not the times, it's how they're doing it. And so if you're picking up and watching those, that's good info. All right, let's go up over to Santa Anita and the San Felipe field of seven scheduled. Forbidden Kingdom looks like the horse to beat in here, coming out of the win in the San Vicente. But Doppelganger comes in for Bob Baffert, ran fourth in that San Vicente behind Forbidden Kingdom, but that was only his second start, and, you know, moves from maiden special to stakes, so maybe benefits from that experience-wise. And I'm going to go with the Frank Miramati pronunciation, Armagnac, the number three horse this afternoon, also a Bob Baffert runner, and we're going to pull up the maiden breaker for this one from January 21st. Armagnac going to be the number three horse in here. John Velasquez on board, who's having a really nice winter out there in Southern California. But I saw from the countdown to the crown that you're kind of tilting in this direction. Your thoughts in the San Felipe?
Well, Forbidden Kingdom's the horse to beat, no doubt about it. He's super fast. He's the best sprinting three-year-old I've seen this year. I don't know about going a mile and a 16th. But Armagnac here, you see, he did win over the trip. But what I like is he worked in company last time with Doppelganger. Again, you can go to XBTV and check out those works. Baffert worked his two horses in company back on February 25th. And I thought Armagnac went a little bit easier early, and Doppelganger was kind of more into the bridle early. And I just thought Armagnac did it a little bit easier, and I think he's going to be the third betting choice of the race, because Doppelganger's been 1-2 and 4-5 in his two races. Forbidden Kingdom's going to be the obvious favorite. In a short field, if you can get the third choice, Johnny V for Baffert's hitting over 50% at the meet with 40 mounts. I mean, that's insane. I think he's 21 for 40, teamed up with Baffert at the meet. It's more of a price play. I don't think that horse is necessarily the most talented of those three, but I think he's going to be the best price, where I don't like the favorite. I mean, Forbidden Kingdom is the best, most talented horse in this group. I just don't know how far he can run. It's an interesting role reversal in here that Baffert's got a horse by Into Mischief. Doppelganger is his main player in here. Of course, Into Mischief was a Richard Mandela trainee, and now Richard Mandela's got Forbidden Kingdom, who's by American Pharoah, who's Bob Baffert's Triple Crown winner. So it's kind of like they went and picked teams for this race, and they each drafted somebody off the other side. But it's kind of an interesting twist in that respect. Forbidden Kingdom, I've watched his works. Mandela's done everything a trainer can do to try to get this horse to go two turns. He worked him 6 furlongs. He worked him 7 furlongs. Both works, he put the horse about 5 lengths behind a workmate to try to teach him some patience and come get that workmate. The second work back was pretty good. The last one, he could not catch a maiden. A horse by the name of Microshare outworked him. And that bothered me, because this was the one at 7 furlongs. At 6, he reeled in his workmate. At 7, he hung and couldn't get by his workmate. That's a little bit concerning as they stretch out and try to go two turns here. So I think he's going to be at short price. I think he's going to be odds on, less than even money. So at 4-5, I'll try to beat Forbidden Kingdom. But I realized, if they're talking Woody Stevens, if you're talking Pat Day Mile, maybe one turn races, I think this is the horse. You might see him at Saratoga this summer, Forbidden Kingdom, in a race like the Jerkins. But I don't think he's a two-turn horse. I respect him a lot. I've got him ranked on his talent because, how good he looked in the San Vicente. But I feel like he's going to slide here. I think this is one that's going to take a step backwards today. We'll see. Armagnac, the top pick, there's no great feeling for him. It's just, of the two Bafferts, I think he'll be the better price. He outworked the other one last time. And you're getting John Velasquez or Flavian Pratt on the two Bafferts. So, those two guys have owned the meet. This is one of those races where I would probably, in the multi-race wagers, try to toss Forbidden Kingdom maybe and work the other two in. But this isn't part of the early pick five and not part of the late pick five. So it is all part of the all dirt pick five, though. There's that special first racing all dirt pick five and all turf pick five today. So this is a spot in the all dirt pick five where if you can beat Forbidden Kingdom, Take both Bafferts in here, maybe protect yourself there and not single one or the other. But I think if you beat Forbidden Kingdom, that all dirt pick five probably jacks up a little bit in price. A lot of people are going to lean on him in this spot. The Gulfstream race, the Fountain of Youth, also part of that old dirt pick five. So maybe you can get a price in one or the two legs and beat one of the favorites. I think Forbidden Kingdom is the more vulnerable of the favorites between the 2 3-year-old races today in that old dirt pick five.
Yeah, you beat Forbidden Kingdom, and it's definitely going to juice up the price very, very nicely. I also wanted to just talk quickly about the Battaglia over at the Turfway, primarily because Tis the Bomb's in here, and we had Kenny McPeak on last week, a couple weeks ago, talking Tis the Bomb, and he said he may, coming off of the failure on the dirt, may try the synthetic. And then he kind of, I think he was breaking news. He said maybe as we get to spring and summer over to Europe with Tis the Bomb, which will be a lot of fun. But he does show up in the Battaglia in a nice full field in here. I'm going to pull up, because I know in previous years when we've talked with you at this time of year, the Turfway races, you've kind of like horses coming up from the turf at Gulfstream. We right. don't really wind up with one of those, but Tis the Bomb may be more of a turf horse. Going to pull up the Bourbon from Keeneland last October, October 10th. Tis the Bomb in a really full field that day. Going to be the number 12 horse getting it done. Again, on the turf, subsequently in the Holy Bull, tossed in the clunker. So now they try the synthetic at Turfway. I think he's just going to be a fun story to watch this afternoon. Give us your thoughts on the Battaglia.
Yeah, I mean, he's just a class standout, right? I mean, yeah. when you look down on the running lines with him, the Kentucky Downs Juvenile, the Bourbon, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf, and the Holy Bull, no one's seen races like that in this field. The race at Keeneland overcoming the 12 post, this was a really good effort that day. And he followed it up, and he ran an A-level race, you know, when just the horse outran him to the wire in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, you know, that day, Modern Games. But, I mean, he ran a winning race otherwise among all the Americans. I think he bounces back here because this isn't a great field. Kenny's going to give him a run over the track here before the stakes race, the Jeff Ruby that comes up here next month at Turfway Park. So it's kind of a tune-up race for him. He must have done well, too, you know, to come back in that race. Not in short rest. It's a month's time. But he didn't want to just wait and take one shot into the Jeff Ruby. So that tells me the horse has done well since the last race. And when a good trainer brings a non-effort horse back in quick time, that's usually a really good sign. You know, he didn't put in much of an effort at all in the Holy Bull. So you don't want to sit on a horse like that. A horse who turns in a non-effort, you want to get right back at it with them, and I like that he does that. I think he'll graduate through the, you know, to a stakes winner here this year with this victory today. And you know, he's got two horses from Brad Cox that you have to keep an eye on, of course. You know, Bloodline being one of those for Cox, who comes off the race at Sam Houston. You know, at Sam Houston turf course is kind of a short crop turf course, really fits dirt horse as well. So Bloodline was able to handle that. How will he handle synthetic in the wide post position? That's a little bit more of a question there, but I think Bloodline's got a big shot in there. And a race is the horse who's got the race over the track. He won the Leonidas Stakes as a prep for this, going a mile last time out. He just seems like a logical horse who's going to hit the board and be right there. Rye Eichelberry gets the mount, and he's been riding so well in Texas, one of the hottest riders in America in 2022. Nice to see him get a shot in there. So I think a race will be near the lead. Bloodline will be coming from off the pace for Cox, but they've got to stop Tis the Bomb, who should get the last move and the best move. I think he wins this race, and the problem is I think he'll probably be too short of a price to really get too invested with. And to put a favorite with two Brad Cox horses, I don't think it's going to be a great betting race, but I think it can be something to be productive towards the next step, the Jeff Ruby.
Yeah, and as I said, I wanted to touch on that just because Tis the Bomb, I think you stated it properly, has that class edge in here, but it's going to be fun to watch. Got about, 7 minutes before we have to go over to the Dubai race, but that gives us time to maybe do a little recap. Like your thoughts last week, we're going to watch the stretch run to the Rebel, and Newgrange went off justifiably off the previous race, went off as the 4-5 favorite, but could do no better than 6, Newgrange. The winner, though, number 4, Un Ojo, comes in from New York, or as a New York bred, and had raced prior at Aqueduct, comes in at 75-1, the rank outsider, gets it done. Ethereal Road for Wayne Lucas runs second at 15-1. He's kind of interesting as well. And Barber Road runs third in here. But what was your takeaway from last week's Rebel?
Well, I wanted the race to stop right about this point on the screen because those were my two horses, Ethereal Road and Barber Road. You know, I was at the intersection of Ethereal and Barber for a while and wanted to get that exacta, but it was Un Ojo who stunned everybody here at 75-1. Now, I will say this, handicappers rarely forget things. Un Ojo, where I debuted at Keeneland back in October at 25-1, and I picked him on top that day because I said, Ricky Corville's a high percentage guy in Louisiana. He never shows up at Keeneland. He must think this horse is really good. He ran 8-9 that day. Didn't do anything at 25-1, and I look like an idiot for making him my top pick. Now he's a graded stakes winner a couple months later. So the thought was right. Sometimes you don't connect the dots, though, on the racetrack. Ricky Corbill did have a very nice 2-year-old that just didn't run well that day. And he's got a nice 3-year-old now who's got graded points, Derby points, to qualify to run in the Kentucky Derby. So he's sent back to his training center in Louisiana off of this race. I don't know what they'll do with him next. Maybe go to Keeneland for the Bluegrass. It sounded like that was a plan. Get him into Kentucky and get him back there. They obviously wanted to win a race at Keeneland. That seems to be special to the connections to win a race there, to take this horse there from the farm in Louisiana to debut last year. So he'll be interesting in that spot. I think Barbara Rhodes is a really nice horse who's just consistent and a strong puncher. I don't know that he'll ever win one of the majors, but I think he's going to kind of be one of those horses who will never embarrass you in whatever spot they put him in. I think he's just a good quality horse in the right spot. He can make a lot of money this summer if he's shopped around right to a lot of those derbies that aren't part of the Triple Crown scene. Ethereal Road looked like the winner, right? I mean, he made that bold move. He was wide the whole way. His video of his previous victory, his maiden win last time, was just phenomenal. It was like he was shot out of a cannon. He kind of repeated some of that. He just ran into better competition, and maybe the timing of the move wasn't perfect. So I think Ethereal Road's a horse you've got to keep an eye on. Lucas has had two big 3-year-olds this year. You know, he's got the Philly Secret Oath, who won the Honeybee about a second faster than the final time was for the Rebel. So a lot of people are going to look at the Rebel and say 75-1 winner, slower time than the Honeybee. Let's not take too much out of this race. That's probably the right assessment. But I think Ethereal Road, out of the top three finishers in the Rebels, probably the one that is most interesting to look at moving forward. And Lucas would like to get back to the party at age 86, I'm sure. He's due.
Yeah, and Secret Oath, who you mentioned, has that little Triple Crown nomination symbol there in the PPs. And he said in post-race comments after the Philly race earlier on that card last week, he said, yeah, I want to see what happens in the boys' race later before I decide about the Arkansas Derby. You would have to think, after watching the results, he may be tilting. Although Ethereal Road, it'd be interesting to see, and be interesting to see Wayne Lucas coming back.
I'll say this about the Arkansas Derby. Todd Pletcher supports that race very heavily every year. He's won it a couple times in just the last decade. He's got a ton of horses to divide and figure out where to go. He probably is licking his chops seeing that result, that he thinks his Florida horses would stack up very well. I think you're going to see Todd Pletcher with 1-2 major contenders for the Arkansas Derby this year. So on the forecast, I would look for that.
Great point. And now looking, we got just a minute or so left, but I just wanted to hit on, go back a couple of weeks and look at the Risen Star. It'll be number 5 Epicenter over number 8 Smile Happy. Smile Happy, the beaten favorite. But on your top 20 this week that came out yesterday in Countdown to the Crown, you have Smile Happy over Epicenter. I said after this race, if you were a Smile Happy fan, I had, as I say, Kenny McPeak on. I said, what do you expect on Saturday in this race? And he said, you know, if I'm second or third, that's the launching point. I'll be happy. Smile Happy runs second in here. It seems like you're coming out of this Risen Star feeling this was a pretty good race on the Derby trail.
Yeah, that was a good race for him for sure. Epicenter got away on the front end. He's a very good front runner. There are other really good front runners, Classic Causeway. We'll see some today in the Fountain of Youth. So, you know, when you're stylistically projecting ahead to the Kentucky Derby and how the crop looks, I think that Smile Happy would get a much better setup down the road than he did in that mile and an eighth. The mile and an eighth was the kicker for that comeback race. I mean, that is a long race to make your first race off the comeback for Smile Happy. At a mile and a 16th, he might have been a little fitter to run that. To run as well as he did for the mile and eighth, I thought that was promising, and I've got him still on top. Now, keep in mind, I'm not ranking any of the fillies at this point, and I'm not ranking any of the Bob Baffert horses, because they're not ineligible. The Baffert horses are ineligible at this point. Until they were made eligible, I would put them in the rankings. I would have Messier as the number one top 3-year-old right now if I was including the Baffert horses, and I would certainly have Secret Oath somewhere in that top 5-6 for sure if I was putting fillies. And But historically, what I've done with the Phillies in Countdown to the Crown is I wait until they declare that they're going, and then I bring them in there. Because otherwise, I'm trying to rank one Philly against the entire crop, and I don't follow the three-year-old Phillies nearly as close as I do. So I don't know where – there might be another Philly who hasn't announced intentions with Secret Oath's talent that I'm not studying as close as I should be. So I keep the Phillies out of it until they say they're going, and then I rank them against the other 19, 20 that I have in the poll and try to find a place for them there. So Secret Oath would definitely be in the top five or six for sure, though.
Very good. They're loading in at Dubai, so we got a break. I was going to get to your three things you won't read anywhere else, though, but I'll tout. You mentioned we talked a little bit about Lucas, where he was the brash guy early in the career, but again, with some age, now he's the elder statesman. I laughed when I read that. And your point about Japan on the Derby trail this year, after what they've done over the last 6 months, I thought was a lot of fun, too. So I'll tout people to pick up this week's Countdown to the Crown. Jeremy, as always, great conversation. Really appreciate it. And as we move along the trail, we will talk again.
All right, cash tickets in Dubai, everybody.
Sounds good. Jeremy Plant, Countdown to the Crown, horseplayernow.com. They are loading in at Dubai. We will take a look at this race. We'll go to a break, and when we come back, we'll put in the Frank Miramonte interview from yesterday looking at the great Santa Anita Stakes action. So stay tuned.
Rescape and Sick, and quite a few swinging on, watching for what will happen. Finest Sound is also positively ridden. That will get into the lead after about a furlong. Zakuski, handy enough, getting across, not too far out deep from the worst of the draws. Land of Legends, one off the rail, slides a bit closer. Alfarique hugs the fence. Then comes Military Style in the dull purple colours, racing just off them. Further back then to Kick On and King David and Sir Busker. There's no pace on towards the 1,200 metres mark. Felix is in the black and white silks. Then comes Lord Glitters. You're not going to change him. He's racing towards the back of the field with Highland Avenue. Lucius Tiberius is out at the end, and there's only about 10 lengths that cover them at the corner of the track. The leader is Freescape. Ended up going past Finest Sound, who relinquished that lead and sits a length and a half behind in second. Ursa Minor given every chance at the rail in third. Land of Legends is one off the fence. Then comes Zakuski, who's three deep on the outside, but got to three deep pretty early. Then comes Kick On. Military Style is one off the fence, and Alpha got a nice run, about five lengths off the leader. There we go, a length away to Sir Busker. Felix is next best. Lord Glitters will need to sweat on a run. He's three quarters of the way back. Highland Avenue Black Cap being hustled along. Further back to King David and Lucius Tiberius into the home straight, and Freescape brought them in. Over Finest Sound, who races in second. Ursa Minor, Alfarique is next best. They followed by Land of Legends in the red cap. Felix towards the outside. Sir Busker, Lord Glitters, plenty to do. Finest Sound the leader. Alfarique, Ursa Minor runs a massive race, running the race of his life. It's Finest Sound, Alfarique, Sir Busker. Alfarique gets the lead, and Alfarique powers away. Second to Finest Sound, Ursa Minor third. Sir Busker, then came Felix. They were ahead of Lord Glitters, after them to Kick On. Towards the outside was Highland Avenue, Zakuski. Then came Freescape, Land of Legends next to finish. Military Style, Lucius Tiberius, and King David. So Alfarique is the winner of the Group 1. Jebel Hatter got given every chance by Dane O'Neill under Dane O'Neill for Masaba Almeri in the colours of Shadwell. And will pull it off from Finest Sound, who ran big in defeat. Ursa Minor, that's...
To find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing, Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
A big day of racing coast-to-coast, Gulfstream in Santa Anita, and they will have some combined cross-country wagers as well, including a lot of stakes at both tracks. Thought we would reach out to our friend Frank Miramati from Santa Anita and get some thoughts on West Coast racing. Frank, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Very good. Happy to have you on board. Again, we're taping on Friday. There's a little weather out there, but what are things expected to look like on Saturday weather-wise?
We're expecting some good weather, and we just need some good fortune here at the Great Race Place, because the card, not only here at Santa Anita, but at Gulfstream, we have two phenomenal, phenomenal cards on a new theme that you're going to see from our company first Saturday. And this is a good way to kick it off.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the press release kind of thing here on my computer, and there are two coast-to-coast pick five races, low takeout. One will be an all-dirt stakes pick five. One will be an all-turf stakes pick five. Again, bouncing back and forth between Gulfstream and Santa Anita. Should be a really great, fun day of racing. Some three-year-old action leading on the Derby trail and whatnot. Before we get into it, Frank, just want to touch on the season overall, get your impressions, and I always like to touch on the human side of things, and I pulled up the stats from Equibase last night. Flavien Prat, man, he is running away with the jockey's title. He has 57 wins, Juan Hernandez with 34, but sitting in third place on the win side, half as many starts as Flavien Prat, but John Velasquez hitting at 27%. And when he made the announcement that he was going to head out to Southern California instead of Florida this year, I think a lot of people thought, how's that going to work out? So far, working out pretty good for Johnny V.
Well, Johnny's a Hall of Famer, and he's just such a smart rider. There have been so many examples of his greatness being displayed. And, of course, he has built a very strong relationship with Bob Baffert. Yeah. So the wins that he's getting are very significant. But what I have found is that barns that were typically maybe loyal to other guys are using him as well. And that's bad news for the other jockeys, but it's certainly good news for the connections who are employing him. He's just, look, guys like him have this God-given skill to be able to understand, you know, the horse and to put them in the right place and to get every ounce out of them. We all know that a great jockey can't make a slow horse fast, but a great jockey can certainly make a difference in a race. And Johnny V has done it on numerous occasions, and it's been a lot of fun to watch him.
Yeah, it's just fun to watch him because over the years I've interviewed him a number of times, and he's just a really nice guy as well. He's a great representative for the jockeys, and I think most of the younger guys look up to him, and it's great to see him doing well with the kind of the experiment, so to speak, moving out to Southern California for the winter. And as you say, a lot of that tied in with Baffert.
There was a funny thing a couple years ago. I was at Saratoga, and I saw him one day, and he was limping after a race. And I said to the person I was with, I said, this is a perfect situation. You got to throw out Johnny V in this next race. Look at him. He can't even walk. And he was limping pretty hard. He wins the next race at like 7 or 8 to 1. And then he took off the rest of the mounts, and he took off like the next day or something. So he was definitely in pain, but it was just so fitting. Like, you think you can see the edge with a guy like him who's such an amazing athlete limping. Meanwhile, he limped right into the winner's circle 30 minutes later. It was classic.
That's great. All right, let's take a look at some of the stakes action. We'll start with the highlight and kind of move our way back. Although, is there a highlight? It's a day full of highlights, but the big cap is always a highlight of the Santa Anita meet. That comes up race number 11 on Saturday afternoon out on the West Coast, a mile and a quarter for the older division. Spielberg comes in for Bob Baffert off a string of some really nice works. Brad Cox ships in Warrant off a third in a stake at the Fairgrounds last time. Stiletto Boy, third in the Pegasus World Cup, but third behind Life is Good Knicks Go, so no shame there. I pulled up a replay, though. We're going back to February 5th, Santa Anita. We're going to look at the San Pasquale. It is going to be number two Express Train getting it done. Now has won the last two straight, because just before that he'd won the San Antonio. So he comes into Saturday's big cap in very good form. What are your thoughts on the Santa Anita handicap?
I think he's a complete standout in this race. He has come into his own. He's turned into a very, very, very talented horse. He's about to go over $1 million in career earnings. And I just think he lays over this field. You know, to me, whenever I like a favorite, I like to look at who the second and third choices are. I just don't see Stiletto Boy beating him. I certainly don't see Warrant beating him. And in fact, I think you know, 8-5 on the morning line is the right number. I expect he'll even get bet down from that. And I believe he is the deserving, overwhelming favorite in this race. And I think he'll take care of business. He's never won at a mile and a quarter, but he is a horse that is just such an absolute beast in person. And none of the horses in here have won at this distance. I think he's going to put on a show for us. And maybe if you're looking for some value, maybe try to find a long shot to put underneath him. Maybe even American Theorem, who has some early speed. Kiss Today Goodbye, who didn't really run that well in his last couple, but is capable of much better than he has shown. And that Why, Paul Why, what a great claim he's turned into. I'm actually against the second and third choices from a handicapping standpoint, which makes me think that Express Train is a single.
All right, very good. And again, John Sheriff's trainee, Victor Espinosa, on board and coming off of those two stakes wins already at the meet. He's going to be fun. And, yeah, the mile and a quarter is going to be a question for a lot of these, but I will note that last year in this race, Express Train, pretty close up second. So certainly does have
what a vicious beat he took.
Yeah, certainly does have some good experience at the trip. All right, let's go one race earlier. One of the really top, certainly on the West Coast, but I think nationally one of the top turf races every year, the Frank Kilroe Mile, Grade 1 event, $500,000 up for grabs, and as the name suggests, a mile on the turf. Delaware, who we're familiar, raced a lot on the East Coast for Chad Brown. Last couple of starts has been out at Santa Anita for Patty Gallagher. Beyond Brilliant, boy, this one really intrigues me at the 8-1 price. Going to have to improve, but I don't think that's out of the question with a little bit of a break, a couple of months, and comes back now as a four-year-old. Maybe we'll come back with some added maturity. That's going to be the question mark, though. Count Again, I think, is legitimate in here. Law professor for Mike McCarthy. Tom Morley ships in Tell Your Daddy. I think that one's interesting as well. Space Traveler for Brendan Walsh. But I pulled up the Thunder Road, February 5th, Santa Anita. Count Again is going to be the number three horse here, and Count Again on Saturday morning line is 7-2, and coming off of this win, I think he's interesting. I could, as noted, I could point to three or four others that I think are probably equally as interesting. What do you see in the Kilroe?
I think it's a very tough race. I agree with your assessment on these horses that you've mentioned. My pick is going to be number two, Subconscious, who was the beaten favorite, and he is a talented, lightly raced individual, beautifully bred. And, you know, ever since his debut, I've always wondered how good he would be because, you know, he was basically eliminated at the start of his debut. And then the next couple of times, he looked like he was home and he ended up getting caught. But he's matured. He had rattled off three straight wins last year, came back in the Thunder Road, and he got nailed by Count Again. And Count Again was full of run when he went by him. So he's going to have to fend him off once again. But I think you're going to get a good price. And you talked about the jockey standings. I'm a huge fan of Juan Hernandez. I think he's an outstanding jockey. I called him for many years when I was up in Northern California, and it's a pleasure to watch his development and his ability to, you know, adapt and to adjust and to maintain the same level of excellence while riding higher class horses. You know, sometimes, you know, you get over your head, so to speak. That's been the furthest thing from the truth. For Juan Hernandez, he is a serious rider and a man that you want to have in the final 16th of a mile because he's a tremendous finisher, too. So I'll go for a little bit of a mild upset, if you will, on number two, Subconscious.
Yeah, looking at 5-1 on the morning line, so a nice price. And as I always like to take an extra look at beaten favorites like that, and so Subconscious, interesting. You mentioned Hernandez, as I said at the top when I pulled up the jock stats for the meet so far. He's sitting number two between Pratt and Velasquez, and for folks who don't normally pay attention to West Coast racing as much as here on the East Coast for us, he's a guy that, yeah, I agree, you have to certainly pay attention to. On the girls' side, they'll go in the Beholder Mile, Grade 1 event, also $500,000 up for grabs. Short field in here, but a fun field in that I'm intrigued to see what En Voutant does, and I pulled up a replay for En Voutant It's the Falls City. Last November at Churchill, Envoûtant is the number four horse in here. The Kenny McPeak trainee, over $900,000 in earnings, would pass the million-dollar mark with a win on Saturday. Hasn't been seen since this race. That was last November, but 8-5 on the morning line, probably deservedly so. As time goes by, is the 4-5 favorite. I'm going to be interested to see where the betting public goes when we get to post time, though. But it is Bob Baffert. It is Southern California. So maybe as time goes by, we'll take the action. What do you see in the Beholder?
I think she will be the favorite, and I think she's going to win. She is. Okay. She has turned it on to a whole nother level. Seth, she is just, she's beautiful. Poetry in motion, as Trevor Denman used to say. I can't use that line out of respect to the all-time great, but the weight, her stride, her motion, effortless. And, you know, she has burnt some chalk in her time, you know, if you look at her career. But, you know, she has put it all together now. And I can't see them beating her in this race. I really can't. But that's why they run the race. And Envoûtant is certainly talented, but I think as time goes by, it's in another league.
All right. Interesting. And a little bit earlier, the San Felipe will be race number six on Saturday afternoon. Grade two event, $400,000, 8.5 furlongs. Bob Baffert, Armagnac,
Armagnac.
Armagnac, okay, who broke the maiden nicely last time when stretched in the second start of the career to a mile and a 16th. Doppelganger, also a Bob Baffert runner, broke the maiden in the career debut, and then they tried the San Vicente, ran fourth in there, now stretches out after a couple of sprints. I find that angle a little bit interesting. But I pulled up the San Vicente to watch number one Forbidden Kingdom win. The Richard Mandela runner, I think, comes into this, again, 8-5 on the morning line, probably legitimately so, with a couple of Baffert runners in the mix. Obviously, they'll take a lot of action, but seems off of this race that we're watching here, Forbidden Kingdom is going to be awful tough in the San Felipe. What are your thoughts?
I'll tell you, from a visual standpoint, I would have to agree with you in that regard, because if you look at that race, when they came past the eighth pole, Forbidden Kingdom was in one race, and the rest of them, there were three Bafferts in there, were in another. However, I think there's a significant thing to take into consideration here, and that is the distance of a mile and a 16th. Yeah. And as a result of the change in distance, I'm going to just go against what my eyes showed me on looks, in the post-parade, everything. Forbidden Kingdom was just magnificent in that comeback race last time. The issue I have and the question I have are, can he get the distance? And with Doppelganger, I believe he most certainly can. And again, it's hard to pick Doppelganger against Forbidden Kingdom when you watch that replay. But let's look at a couple of factors. Number one, Doppelganger had only one race under his belt, and that was a maiden race at Los Alamitos. Now he came here. He was understandably a little bit flat in the first test against winners, but he was the odds-on favorite. His dam was a five-time route winner, and he has a sibling. All five of his wins were routes. So he's all about route pedigree here, and now he stretches out. Forbidden Kingdom, on the other hand, is strictly a sprinter pedigree, and they even went to the turf, understandably, because he's by American Pharoah and his progeny have been so efficient on the grass. I think that the distance will be the equalizer, and I'm going to pick Doppelganger to turn the tables on Forbidden Kingdom. And again, it's not from watching the replay, because when I was watching it live, I couldn't believe those other horses were making no impact. It was a deceptive 2.25 lengths, because he basically beat that field down. I just don't know if he can do it longer. He's in the right hands of a Hall of Famer. It should be an exceptional showdown. It wouldn't stun me if he won, but I'm just a pedigree guy, and I've got to go with what I'm seeing. There's just too much in the favor of Doppelganger with regard to going the two turns. And I look for him to maybe turn the tables.
All right. Interesting. And certainly that'll play along the Kentucky Derby trail on the three-year-old side of things. Fifth race on Saturday afternoon, the Buena Vista, a grade two event on the turf at a mile, couple hundred thousand dollars up for grabs. And in this one, Tony Ann lightly raced for Phil D'Amato and comes in with a three-race win streak, but does make her stakes debut on Saturday. Going to Vegas, last seen kind of throwing in a clunker in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mayor Turf, but boy, had shown some real talent prior to that and seems to have a real affinity for Santa Anita with 11 starts overall and 8 exact finishes on the turf course. But I pulled up a replay of Legs Galore. We're going to watch, this is the Sunshine Millions Filly and Mayor Turf, Santa Anita back on January 15th. Legs Galore, the number 12 horse, takes him wire to wire. That clearly will be the game plan. It's going to be catch me if you can for Legs Galore on Saturday. And it's 7-2. I think if that morning line holds up, speed always dangerous. And I think Legs Galore is interesting. What do you think of the Buena Vista?
She's certainly a very talented mare. I was going to say filly, but she's now 5. I'm going to pick Tony Ann, actually, to just keep her winning streak intact. I like what she's done. The turn back to a mile should be right in her wheelhouse. I think the way the race unfolds is that Legs Galore is going to sprint clear. Tony Ann has natural speed to be in a good position. Going to Vegas is certainly compromised by that post, but she, I mean, what a claim she's turned in. I think they got her for like 40,000. So I think, and Mucho Unusual is a really nice cowbred, but, you know, going to Vegas is continually getting the best of her. I'm going to just go for a mild upset. I think it's a tough race and a wide open one, but Tony Ann, look, you know, she can't read the form. She doesn't know what the story is as far as who she's facing. All she knows is she's been winning, and she's been in company with Umberto Rispoli. They have a good connection, and maybe she pulls off a mild upset here in the Buena Vista, but another outstanding race.
Yeah, you're looking for her to maybe do what she did a couple starts back and kind of stalk and pounce, because it seems like of the speed, Legs Galore is the one that's going to be out there.
No, there's no debate whatsoever. Legs Galore is going to be in front. She's way faster than her. Yeah. So I'm just hoping that Tony Ann does have enough natural speed to be in the right spot. And, you know, she's going to have to go after Legs Galore, you know, before the quarter pole to try to, tackle her, because you can't let Legs Galore get loose. She's just too talented for that, and she might be hard to run down. I certainly give her a long look in this race. But, you know, she has come up a little bit short in some of those races. The one that she won going a mile was against fellow cowbreds. This is a much, much tougher spot. She's talented. She's in the right hands. Ricky Gonzalez gets along with her. They've had a lot of success together. But I'm going to go with the proven router, Tony Ann, who I think wants to go every bit of a mile and more. And I think that maybe she can beat him.
Yeah, as I say, stakes debut, but deservedly so, obviously, with that talent. And finally, really interested to hear your thoughts on the horse we're going to take a look at here in the San Carlos. I mean, it's a fun race with Canadian Pride coming off a triple-digit buyer win. 8 rings is a Bob Baffert horse. But Baffert also has Cezanne. And I pulled up a replay of a workout. This is going back a few workouts. And I pulled it up because, A, it was available, but also Cezanne will be on the outside. Rockefeller will be on the inside, and Rockefeller shows up on Saturday in the Gotham in New York. So I thought it was kind of worth taking a look at this because of that. But Cezanne, subsequent to this workout, had 3 other really nice bullet workouts. Now, the seasonal debut from an April to January layoff was certainly disappointing for a horse that attracted millions of dollars and had all kinds of buzz, millions of dollars at auction and buzz early in the career, and kind of lived up to it. So the comebacker in January was a little bit disappointing, but boy, the workouts seemed to tout this horse as maybe going to benefit from that and move forward. So I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this one and just the San Carlos overall.
I do like him. I think, you know, that was a dreadful performance last time, let's be honest. I mean, he was never a factor. The other Baffert held on in that race in a very game performance. But Cezanne was disappointing there. And, you know, he's had a couple of layoffs in his career, but his victory in the Kona Gold was nothing short of sensational. His debut was awesome. I think he's the goods, and I think he'll be tighter and ready. And those who took a bath that didn't involve Mr. Bubble at 3-5 last time might be able to get their money back here in the San Carlos. I think his best is best. You know, his stablemate, 8 rings, turning back is an intriguing possibility. Although he's never even hit the board at 7-8, which is stunning. You know, I'm a little concerned about him because when he took the little starch out of Hot Rod Charlie a couple of starts ago in the San Antonio where Express Train came and nailed them both, he then came back the next time and Express Train drilled him going along. He's turning back to 7. I just think Cezanne might have a little more brilliance to him than Eight Rings. And, of course, the Calbred Brickyard Ride is talented. I actually picked it Cezanne over Canadian Pride. One thing about Canadian Pride, when you watch him out on the track, and, you know, he's just an allowance horse so far, but he really makes a beautiful presence about himself in the post parade. He's a good-looking 5-year-old gelding by Creative Cause. And I think Cezanne wins, and I think maybe Canadian Pride could possibly get second in it.
Yeah, after triple-digit buyer, it may just be signal he's in really good kind of career form right now. But I'm interested to see what Cezanne does on Saturday. Still lightly raced, but certainly had shown all kinds of talent early in the career, kind of living up to the purchase price. Frank, appreciate the thoughts on the stakes action. Before we let you go, up in the announcer's booth, what's a day like this mean, and how do you prep for a day like this? At least one or a couple of the races will be on CNBC. So what are your thoughts and preparations going into a really big Saturday like this?
I try to pretend there are a bunch of $5,000 claimers or a starter allowance race, and just theoretically it should be easier to call these races because I know the horses better than in other races because of their popularity and so on. The goal is every day when I go into that booth is to just celebrate the winners, to be objective, and to enjoy the moment and to enjoy this incredible opportunity that I have to be a part of this magnificent card. And, you know, when I walk into Santa Anita every day from the employee parking lot, I stare at the big iconic sign that has the flags above it, the famous Santa Anita Park sign, and I give myself at least 10 seconds where it's just me looking at that sign, reflecting on a lot of things. My dad taking me there as a kid, me taking the bus there when I shouldn't have, when I was in high school, asking my friends to give me rides out there, and, you know, learning from the greatest of all time, Trevor Denman, to how to describe a race, and now to have that privilege and opportunity. These big days are pretty stressful because I want to deliver, but at the same time, I just want to let the horses speak and do the best I can to accurately and objectively describe it. And these are some fun races to call, and I'm just very grateful for it.
Yeah, and you know, we sit here as fans and applaud you. I've certainly been following your career and have known you for a number of years now, working your way to Santa Anita from the other tracks. The imitation race calls that people can find on YouTube and whatnot, they were a lot of fun, and now you've moved on to Santa Anita, and it was great when you got that. And it's fun to see you and hear you in the booth calling really one of the American races that has all kinds of historical value, like the Big Cap. And so I'm just thrilled that you're out there and get a chance to do that.
I'm so thankful for your support. You've been supportive of me from the days of Equidaily. You always used to put on obscure articles from Northern California papers, and I always appreciated that. I didn't know who you were at the time, but I said, I want to meet that guy one day. He's been very good to me. Like some of the papers you couldn't find if you tried, you somehow had those articles up on your website, and I will always appreciate that from you.
Yeah, and as I say, it's been fun to watch you as you bounced around and moved your way up the ladder and got to Santa Anita and days like Saturday. So again, we're really looking forward to it. It is a spectacular day, corporate-wise as well, with that combination of the Gulfstream great stakes card, the Santa Anita great stakes card. Again, there are two pick fives, the cross country, one all dirt stakes, one all turf stakes. Should be fun for the players, should be fun for folks on track, but also listening to the simulcast signal, because you always do a great job. And Frank, we appreciate the visit this morning. We'll talk again in the future.
Thanks a million, Seth.
Appreciate it. Frank Miramonte, again, big day out at Santa Anita on Saturday. Always fun to talk to Frank. Appreciate his taking the time yesterday. Appreciate Jeremy Plonk earlier on Countdown to the Crown. Again, tout that if you haven't already visited. You can either go to horseplayernow.com, and there's a link there. I am certain. You can type in Countdown to the Crown in Google, and it'll take you right to the Countdown to the Crown page. But again, every Friday, nice PDF that goes over to the stakes races, preview and review on the Derby Trail. So highly tout that as well. But a lot of great three-year-old action today. The Gotham in New York. Post time at Aqueduct today will be 12:50. The Fountain of Youth down at Gulfstream with a great stakes undercard. The post time at Gulfstream, 12:10. Santa Anita with the San Felipe and the Big Cap historical race as an historical race as you get in America. And I mentioned with Jeremy Plonk at Turfway tonight, the fifth race there. will be the Battaglia for the three-year-old. It's just going to be fun to see what Tis the Bomb can do in there. Really, just a fun stakes day. We'll talk about it in review tomorrow on Racing Across America, but it's still in our front lights, our headlights today, all ahead of us. Really looking forward to it. You can stay tuned. I will be back this afternoon with OTB Live for a Saturday afternoon, and we'll be looking at a lot of this great stakes action. Gulfstream, Aqueduct, I'll pull some Oaklawn into the mix as well as we get into the evening. You'll have some Santa Anita to look at. Obviously, Gulfstream, Aqueduct, Santa Anita, they have their own pick fours and their own pick fives. That'll be great, fun action. But don't forget those two coast-to-coast plays. And I pulled up OTB Bet. I pulled up just before I came back on the air. And if you're looking for the Gulfstream, Santa Anita, All Stakes Dirt Pick 5 and All Stakes Turf Pick 5, if you scroll down the menu choices for the tracks you can play at CapitalOTBBet.com, you'll find on the menu one is labeled Coast to Coast Turf Pick 5 and one is labeled Coast to Coast Dirt Pick 5. So they each have their separate little clickable titles there to play those Pick 5s. And as I mentioned earlier, you can go to Equibase, front page of Equibase over on the right side. There's a little graphic where you can pull up the free PPs for each of those Pick 5 sequences. So no reason not to jump in and have a little fun with those coast-to-coast Pick 5s, which should be a lot of fun today, teaming up Gulfstream and Santa Anita. But again, great stakes day up in New York as well. So, boy, really looking forward to it. Invite you to stay tuned to the network as we'll be back in an hour or so, maybe a little longer than that. We'll wait till the end of the NYRA pregame. We'll be back with OTB Live for Saturday afternoon looking at a lot of this great racing because the undercard at Gulfstream, as we touted with Brian Addo earlier, very good as well with some maiden races that will play in the three-year-old filly and male divisions later on, you would have to think. All right, I'm going to wrap it up for this edition of Racing Across America. Just a promotional reminder, tomorrow, the Hudson Branch, we have a Fan Appreciation Day. So if you're a patron at the Hudson Branch, we would love to have you swing by tomorrow, Sunday afternoon, and give us our chance to say thank you to you. Fan Appreciation Day at the Hudson Branch tomorrow, Sunday. We want to thank our friends at Gulfstream for their sponsorship of this, some of the other programming and events here at Capital OTB. We appreciate their support during the championship meet. And today lives up to that moniker, championship meet, with a great day of racing down at Gulfstream and beyond. Hopefully we've given you some ideas and a little preview that has you juiced up for the afternoon because it's a great day of racing, and we'll be covering it again in about an hour and a half or so. I'm Seth Merrill. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you a little bit later on.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.